Hello, this is John Galloway.
And this is Jesse Liberty.
And this is the Full Stack Videocast, a pair programming experiment where we build out a full working application spanning from server to web and phone and everything else in between while you watch.
Okay, John.
Hey, Jesse.
There's always that 1 second delay when I call your name. Why is that, John? What are you doing?
I'm waking up.
You're waking up. Because, I mean, I know the speed of light is faster than that, so something's not right.
Right.
We did an experiment when I was living in a commune is what it was. But in any case, we had somebody upstairs on the third floor, and I was downstairs on the first floor, and mm-hmm. we were talking to somebody in California. And we had him take, we had two lines, so we had him, we called him on both lines, and we had him take the handset and flip it, receiver to transmitter.
Yep.
And the person upstairs yelled very loud so that I could hear them on the first floor, and I literally heard them through the phone before I heard them through the air.
That is fun with the speed of light.
Speed of light is fast, man.
Wow.
That was very cool. And that was through all the switching and stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, so what are we doing today?
Okay, so we're going to look at the client. I know you've been working on, we did all that. We started kind of like on different ends. We had the server side and the database and the services, and then you've been working on the client. And then lately we kind of plumbed those to hook them together. And then I know you've been just kind of going to town with actually getting everything hooked up. I don't know if we actually recorded showing how we hooked up the actual working client to the service. Have we done that?
We did not. We did the very simple one. We should look at that a little bit. What we have is two connections to the service now, and we can just go through this really quickly. I'll show you what we have, and then we mm-hmm. can decide if there are pieces that we want to look at in any kind of depth. So let me bring up Visual Studio. And I'm going to bring up this server, and I'm going to run that application, even though that's going to replace what was in our browser. I'll bring up the client. Another instance of Visual Studio.
I had a random idea to spring on you while Visual Studio is starting up.
Please.
Which is that eventually we want to host that server somewhere.
Yes.
And I was thinking of, there's this App Harbor. There's several different solutions out there, but App Harbor is kind of neat. Is it's a lightweight, free for low volume cloud hosting option. So
that's an interesting idea. Azure might be an interesting idea.
It's true, but I don't think we got. I don't think we have a way to do any Azure for free.
Yeah, good point. And the fact that we both work for Microsoft won't cut any ice at all.
Oh no.
Okay, well, that'll get us in serious trouble with the Azure evangelist, that little back
and forth.
I hope
so. I'm trying to find one that'll give me some freebies.
Okay.
Well, as opposed to just a t-shirt. The t-shirts are nice.
They are nice.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, so running the client. Let's just run through it, and we can talk about where it's talking to the service and so on. So I put in an initial screen just to have a departure point, and you click on descriptors, and I'm not sure, frankly, what we've shown and what we haven't, so I'll run through all of this very quickly, which is I'm going to click into the first name box, and up comes the SIP, and which is the soft interface panel, otherwise known as a keyboard, and I'm going to hit the pause key or the break key on my keyboard, which will allow it to think that I'm using an external keyboard so that I can use my computer's keyboard, and I will put in, I need now a name that we haven't actually used already. So let's use, I know what we'll use. We'll use Brian Goldfarb. So I don't think he's in our database yet. And then we have this pop-up that I've hand-tooled, but I might end up replacing this with the item picker in the Silverlight phone toolkit, because I think that does what this does, only it does it, what's the right technical word? Well. But in any case, so you can pick your hair length. So we'll say that Brian, he has short hair, right? And
yeah.
His hair color is, I don't know what it is. We'll just
brown.
Say it's brown. And then you flick your finger to the next screen. And let's pretend he wears contacts. And he's clean shaven, I believe. And we're going to leave height empty. Just, I don't want to fill that in, and I don't want to fill in eye color. So that's all I'm going to fill in for this person who I met. And then
there's some very in-depth information there. Contacts. I don't know that I would know that about most.
Yeah, you'd have to know somebody pretty well to know they're wearing contacts. Now you do have the option here of taking a picture of the person and having that go with the information as well, and that would be desirable and will be saved as a bitmap, I believe. And,
although I think at this point it will actually just crash the application.
Or at least ignore it. but in any case, when you click save, that's where we're doing an interaction with the server. So we should go over to the server and see that. If we bring up the server and we come over to the people tab, we should now, and refresh it, we should now see that Brian is listed. And there he is.
Yep.
And if we look at the details, we can see all the information that we put in about him.
Good stuff.
So that's all in there, and that's working. The second piece that I worked on once we got that working was to be able to do a search. So let's go back to the emulator, and you can put in as much information as you want about the person you're looking for. So, for example, I can say, I want to find that person who had short brown hair, but I don't remember who it was. Is that what we said? Brian had brown hair? Okay. So I don't remember who it was, and we may have more than one, and I could choose to fill in any of these or not, but let's go ahead and just hit the search button, and what you get back is a list of the people in the database who match.
Mm-hmm.
So there were four, and Brian is one of them, and if I click on any each of these, I get the detailed information up here, although what I will do as the next step is when you click, you'll go to a detailed page. But it was convenient to put it all up here. So you can see when I click.
I thought that was really, an innovative way to do that, that you've got the same, because our descriptors thing is, it's a little bit, there's a lot of different options and stuff. So I thought it was great to just have for this. It's optional. You fill in what you know, and you're using the same interface for both.
Right. The same controls, the same interface. Exactly. The only difference is which button you push at the end. It uses literally the same controls. In fact, it's not duplicating those controls. It's the literal same control. I can't quite say that in English enough. I'm ambivalent about, I don't like the first name equal Brian, last name equal. I mean, that we would have to clean up. But there's part of me that likes the idea of having the details come up right on the same page as opposed to going to a details page. But it might be easier to lay it out nicely on a details page. Okay, so we can go back, actually, and change what we're looking for. So if I put in, for example, hair length bald, and then we don't have to flip to screen 2. We can actually flip the other way and just hit the search button. And there was one person in the database. I don't know who that was supposed to be, but it was somebody. And so that's what I have. And we're closing in on feature complete. I mean, this is not what it will look like. I'd like to get a designer involved and talk to them about how to do this and at least some modifications to make it look a little nicer. But the basic features for the first version, I think, are closing in very quickly. There's plenty of work that's going to come up as we do, as you say, move it to a server, and as we tinker with what the display should be and doing the necessary testing, that I'm loath to add too many more features to the first version of this.
Mm-hmm.
But we might want to talk a little bit about how some of this was done, specifically talking to the server and the sequence that happens during a search. Those are two things that I don't think we've really looked at in any detail.
Right. So the connecting to the server part, in our previous two, we showed setting up an OData service on the server, and then on the client, we had that proxy that was generated by Data Service Util, and then we called into that from our application. We retrieved a list of people, and we did work, and then we just said context.save on the save method.
Right, and let's take a quick look at that. That exactly what you just said is over here in the descriptive view, XAML CS, the code behind. I have not, actually on this one page, I've not factored it out into MVVM, so it's in the code behind. And we can see that pretty quickly, that here's the constructor. The constructor says that it wants most of the setup to happen in the loaded event. The loaded event has the save button and the search button. So if we look at what happens with the save button first, if we go down to save button click and open that up, that is actually incredibly simple, because we're letting the context handle writing everything back to the server.
Mm-hmm. And so this is, for more information on this, for anyone that's watching, hi, Mom, is that we drilled into this more in the previous, which I think was episode 7, where we looked at this begin save changes. And one difference that I notice here, this is an asynchronous save, but here instead of just saving and we're done, I think you've got this new async callback to load people.
Yes, and what happened was I wanted to clear the fields and have another person object ready to go, and getting the order of that properly made me realize that this was designed to have a callback, and we had a race condition that was built in, as you pointed out when we were debugging this together, where we go and get the people collection from the server after we do a save, but it's possible that the save hasn't completed before we go and get that before we go back to getting that collection of people. And so by using this properly, by having that be in the callback on this asynchronous method, then we know that the order will happen properly.
Okay, so what's happening then is I click save.
Mm-hmm.
It fires a save event, which is going to be long running. It's asynchronous. And when that save finishes and the server's completed saving and the proxy's notified and all that, then this async callback fires and calls load people, and that causes the app to then asynchronously reload all those people.
That's right.
So that as you just showed, when you put in Brian Goldfarb and then hit search, that search information was available. It could be that
right.
local search.
That's right. The only thing that was missing in your explanation is to make explicit that when you're saving a person into the people collection on the server, and so that's why we want to make sure that we don't go retrieve that people collection until that person has been added.
Right. So, and we talked about, you know, do we just, when you save, just dump that person right into the local collection that's running in the phone, but we ended up saying that, you know, the save may not have fired. There may have been some validation error on the server that we want to prevent, you know, saving a duplicate person. And also, when we're doing the search, we want to have the ID in sync, and that's assigned on the server. So we
right.
ended up saying that it makes sense to, you know, do a full save to the server and then reload my people.
Now, we may need to revisit that when we load this onto a real server. We're working over a cellular network, and we see what the performance is like, and then we may do some optimization where we do things. I can certainly imagine that instead of saving to the server, what we do is we get it once, and we then put that into isolated storage. We do all our updates and reads from isolated storage, and then in the background, we go and update the server so as not to lose that data. But that would be, in my mind, that would be an optimization.
Mm-hmm.
Now, meanwhile, while this is running asynchronously, it then will fall through and call make new person. And make new person just initializes a new person, which sets all the initial values on that person to blank and so forth, and adds that person to the people collection and sets the data context. So, now that I'm looking at this, I want to come back to this and make sure that adding this person to the people collection is not order dependent either.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
the things you find when you expand.
right.
So that's save. Let's take a quick look at search. When you click the search button, we come in here, and this is forming a query where we want to go look at what is in the people collection. And I created these little methods, test glasses, test hair color, test hair length. We can look at any of these very quickly. So test hair length says go in and set a hair length variable. So this is just a string variable to whatever is in the content of the hair length button. And that is whatever the user has selected. If that's null or empty, and remember that they were blank before they're selected. So if that's null or empty, or if the hair length that is in the person that you have matches the hair length that was on that button, then you're saying, yes, this is a match. And the key thing to be clear about here is that we're saying true, we're matching if it's empty. So if you choose to search on hair length and eye color but nothing else, then all the other fields, when they're tested, will test as true because you've chosen not to include them in your search.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is pretty consistent with what the user intends by putting in one or two fields and saying, find everybody who matches this. All the other fields you're basically going to ignore. What I didn't do was flip it the other way around and say, if when you entered this person, you didn't set their hair length, and now you're searching for long hair, should you match on somebody where there's no entry at all? And that's also subject to, you know, revisiting. It wouldn't be hard to add that logic as well, because now that won't match.
Yeah, it. I think that makes sense what you're saying, but it almost seems like something where we have, you know, different match qualities or something, you know, and this could get complicated fast, but where you've got kind of like
thinking of like relevance rating.
Exactly.
Right.
And so you know, and maybe you only show the irrelevant matches if we don't get a better match.
Or we could order them by relevance, you know, we could say, if you say long hair and blonde, and what I have about this person is long hair, and I don't have any color. Now, if what I have is long hair and brown, you said long hair and blonde, they don't match.
Yeah.
But if what I have is long hair and blank, because the person didn't fill in the hair color, then I think, you know, you get a weight for the exact match of long hair, and you get a lesser weight for, well, you asked for blonde, and this person, we don't know what their hair color is, but that arguably is still matchable.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's something that can come along either as part of the application before we release, or I'm a big believer in getting it out there and letting people use it and let them tell you whether they care about that or not. But there's also the prime directive of don't do anything stupid. So we'll take a look at that. But returning to what search does, so it runs through all these tests and then it does a select. And you can see that it's just basically selecting on all of those values. And then we get the results. And what I'm doing with the results, and I thought about whether there's a more optimal way to do this, and please keep those cards and letters coming if you think that there is. But what I'm doing is I'm choosing to save that in isolated storage and then navigate to the results page and pull it out of isolated storage. And that is fast enough and efficient enough and reliable enough that it seemed like a reasonable way to go. However, while you certainly can save objects, remember remember that what's going to be on the other side is just going to be a dictionary that knows that you have an object and you're going to have to cast it back to its real type.
Mm-hmm.
And the current real type that you get, if you look at what we're getting in query, if you look at, right now this is defining itself as an ienumerable of anonymous query. I ran into, when I was looking at the type that was going to be stored and have to be pulled back, I actually wrote it down because I thought about, did I want to do this? It was a system link enumerable of select iterator of type, who is that server.model.person, and then, frankly, a syntax I don't know, which was open angle, close angle, F underbar anonymous type ; of string comma string. It was hideous. It was just ludicrous. So I said, well, rather than fighting that, I'm just going to, you know, pay the price and make a new list of strings and iterate through the results we get and just save them as strings. And so I created a key called query result and I go to isolated storage and I say, do you already contain query results? If so, replace those query results with the current list of strings. Otherwise, if you don't already have it, then add the current list of strings under that key and then navigate to the new page. And if we go to the new page, you can see that when we get to the new page, we say query result. Well, the first thing we do is we set up isolated storage, and we come down here to display results, which we get out of isolated storage as a list of strings. And then we iterate through that, parsing out the first name and last name to get rid of those prompts, creating just first name space last name, and adding that to the collection display, which we then make the item source for the list box, which gives you that display of the names as a list. And then we also register that we want to know when the list selection changes, and when it does, we go up to the text block and set the results using that as an offset, which can also be the offset that we pass to a details page. So the net result of this is that the search result page is able to show the list, and then when you click on an individual in the list, we're notified, and we can show the details, show the photograph, whatever.
Cool. And, I think one thing to just talk about in passing is that a lot of this is still kind of spike code as far as figuring out how to get everything hooked together, to play with how the UI and search works and stuff like that. And so that, at this level, we don't have any we don't have much testing on the client. That's definitely something we want to leverage, but it's something where we're still kind of figuring out how all this is going
to
work.
Right, and I think calling it spike code is exactly right. When I was saying earlier about trying to get to feature complete, part of my thinking is that a lot of what we're doing in this code may need to change, and I'd like to subject this to another set of eyes for, a review, and I'd like to think about and test the reliability and the performance, and so my approach to that, especially with something that's bounded like this, that's not an enormously complex application, is to get it working and then to begin to, which ameliorates some of that anxiety about where are the real scary parts of this. Okay, so we've got, the main features working. If we have to tear some of this down and rebuild it, I'm very happy to do that. Now, I will admit that the place that I am disappointed in the process and disappointed in myself is that it has not been test-driven design. It has not been that we wrote a test and then wrote just enough to fill that test and then wrote another test and just enough to fill that test. And I'm not sure whether that's because that it's so UI intensive or because there was so much that we were, exploring where we weren't really sure about how the pieces were going to fit together, or it's just a question of, just trying again and trying again and trying again to get into that mindset to really do that rather than jumping ahead and building code and then testing.
I find for myself that it's very, very difficult to do test-driven when you're exploring a framework and you're figuring out how even you're going to build it, because you don't know what, like, tests generally, unless you're going to go to the behavior level, tests generally are they're testing at the unit level, and when you don't even know what those units are, it's really hard to leverage that and move forward. So
right. I mean, I think the next application I write with Entity Framework code first, I'm going to feel a lot more confident about the relationship between the client and the server. But on this one, I think you're right that this was more exploratory. And so writing the test first, although, I'm certainly willing to hear from folks who've been doing a lot of test-driven development that it is possible to do everything, all of your design, through those tests. I mean, I used to work for a guy who said, in theory and practice are the same, but in practice they never are.
Yeah.
And I think I have that problem with using TDD on something where I'm finding my way.
I think that I would guess your experience is the same, but I think we were both a little bit surprised that some of the things that we kind of guessed would hook together were a little bit more complex than we thought. There were a few more moving parts in order to get everything end-to-end data going all the way onto the phone and back. And I think some of that is that we're using a lot of CTP brand new stuff that, you know, is either changing or not completely documented, or definitely we're still figuring out.
So. Right. And, you know, they're just little tricks that, you know, after you know them, then it's easy. Like when we discovered that you had to set the crash on connection bit to false, right? I mean, it's a little guess.
Yeah, that pesky bit.
So that's what I have. And I, you know, there's plenty more to do in cleaning this up and testing this, but I do think that we are zeroing in on a working application.
Mm-hmm. This is great. I think on the server side, some big areas where we still need to handle, this is still single user. So this is a one person app. All the, you know what I mean? The service, yes, doesn't distinguish between either authentication to allow people in, and it also doesn't filter out by if we both are saving contacts. It's not saving these are Jesse's and these are John's contacts. So that's definitely something. I think that's probably the biggest thing that needs to happen on the server.
Right. And then there's the other client, the Silverlight client, with the little application that brings up and quizzes you on the names and photos, and that just has to get all wired together once we have the photos working the way we expect.
Right.
So okay. There's still a little work to do, but we have time. We're shooting for Mix to have something working, and I guarantee we'll have something working.
Well, I really do think that it was positive that we stepped back and built out that simple scenario, because number one, it made things workable for us, and I hope also that for other people that are going through the same thing, that they've been able to follow that a little bit more than, you know, a full working app, you know, is easy to follow.
Yes, that's detailed in one of the earlier full stack episodes, and also the two of us both put up at the same time a blog entry that walks through that in some detail. And I think that was certainly helpful to me. I've gone back to that posting to figure out what the next step is on making some of these connections. And again, once you've got it working, it's very clear how to proceed, and you can read the code and it makes good sense. It's just, you know, getting that syntax exactly right so that everything connects up from the server to the client. Took a little exploration.
Yeah. All right.
So I think we're good for this episode, as it were, and we'll be looking at the server again on the next one, I suspect.
I think that makes sense, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. For Microsoft, this is Jesse Liberty.
And this is John Galloway.